Today is April 17th, 2024. I'm Derek Fildebrandt, publisher of the Western Standard, and you're watching The Pipeline. I'm joined by my two good friends here, Western Standard opinion editor Nigel Hannaford.
Hello again.
And Western Standard senior Alberta columnist Corey Cranky Morgan.
Yay, welcome back to the West.
Oh, yeah. I've been out yonder in East reporting on the status of the colonies.
We're just going to watch, make sure you don't get, you know, infected out there or something.
No, I think I'm okay. All right. Well, we got some fun and interesting topics today. So speaking of my trip to the East, I was in a washroom at the Ottawa International Airport returning to Wild Rose Country. And before I got on a plane, I took a little leak. And wow, they're really true. I found free tampons and maxi pads in the men's room at the Calgary International Airport. We've reported on it before, but even I'm like, it's got to be
in the Calgary International?
Sorry, the Ottawa International Airport. Even though they're both federal, we'll talk about maybe why it's not in Calgary that I've seen at least, and it is in Ottawa.
We do things a little differently out west here.
We understand men don't need tampons. But yeah, this is not new news that this is a thing, but it was always very theoretical to me until I actually saw the things. The biggest shocker to me is that the left openly defended it. They lost their minds. We'll talk about the video here. But yeah, we're going to talk about the madness around free tampons in federally regulated men's rooms in Canada. We're going to talk about the big federal budget that just came down. Trudeau's mega billions, super free stuff. Happy budget. And we're going to talk about the Coots 3. You remember the protest and blockade at the Alberta-Montana border during the kind of the height of the fight against COVID lockdowns and mandates, what was going on there. The so-called Coots 3, we just found out just late last night, were found guilty of mischief. These miscreants. All right. Well, let's get into it. We're going to start with, I think, no pun intended, the heaviest or the lightest of these three topics. Free Trudeau tampons for men. So, I was just ready to fly back here to Alberta, leaving Ottawa. I've never seen it in the men's room, at the Calgary International Airport, but I went to take a leak and lo and behold, this is what happened.
This is Derek Fildebrandt of the Western Standard. I'm in the, Ottawa International Airport. And I came to take a leak before my flight, and I just found some that we've reported on, but I just never really believed it was too stupid to really be real. This is, you're seeing backwards on my camera here, but that is a napkin serviette. I think that's a maxi pad, more or less, and a tampon. I assure you, I am not in the ladies' room. I'm in a federally regulated men's room. So, I don't mean to take federal resources from taxpayers here, but I'm going to get a... Oh no, there's no more taxi pads for my dick. Let me try tampon. Okay, there's no more out, unfortunately. But I do have a tampon here. The machine appears to be out of maxi pads and tampons for men. But here we go. This is from me in the men's room. At a federally regulated bathroom in the People's Republic of Canada. God bless you, people.
So it was funny. I was taking a leak and I looked over. I saw something and I did a double take. I'm like, no way. Because, even though we've reported, I was like, maybe it's fake news. I've never actually seen these things. We know it's on military bases so that our brave soldiers, our fighting men can deal with their monthly visitor. Then I saw it, and I just burst out laughing. And there was another guy at the other end of the bathroom at a urinal, and he looks over at me, but what I'm finding so funny. I couldn't even get a word. I just pointed at it, and he saw it, and he burst out laughing. Soon enough, the whole men's room was just kind of laughing, because a lot of people just didn't notice it, because it was kind of like the emperor with no clothes. How do you notice a tampon dispenser in a men's room? It was funny. I just threw this little video up, and I think it's over 3 million views now. And man, the lefties went nuts. A lot of it was bots, but a lot of it was real. lefties. And normally they seem quiet about this kind of thing. It's like, you know, they support it, but it's so self-evidently, what's the polite and politically correct term I can use? I don't, okay, I can't.
Stupid?
Very, so self-evidently ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're defending it like, of course, you know, it could be used for bandages and first aid. We'll put a first aid kit in the bathroom. Like, they're defending any excuse for it. Start with you, Nigel. What do you make of... Why do you think that it's in the Ottawa... Because they're both federal facilities. The federal regulations pronounced by the cabinet said it should be in all men's rooms in Canada, free tampons for... what was the term you use?
Manpons.
Yeah, manpons and... okay, we have to remember this is on cable. I have to watch what I say. Manpons and men's maxis. Why do you think that we do? I have never seen it, at least in the Calgary airport. It just got vandalized the first day they put it up. I don't know.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's relatively easy for somebody in Ottawa to say to somebody else in Ottawa, go down and make sure they've got them in the Ottawa airport. That's easy to order, easy to do, easy to check up on, and probably would have more sympathy among the general public back there than it does here. But your own reaction to it is probably speaks for many in Alberta, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, Manitoba, and Ontario outside of Toronto. The other thing that I thought about this was in their attempts to be inclusive and to recognize diversity, they have in actual fact become discriminatory because we have a young lady on our staff here who was very enterprising and last night went out to the Calgary International Airport to check. And on her assurance, there is no such machine in the men's room, but there is in the ladies' room, but it's not free.
Yes.
You have to put a dollar in if you are a woman and you need a tampon at the Calgary International, but if you are a man in the Ottawa International, it's free, sir.
No, but now it just clicked at me. It makes sense. This is another equalization program. Alberta women pay for tampons, so Ontario men have them for free.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
Well, of course it makes sense. There is no depths to which this sinister government will not stoop to.
Keep greening the West.
It's the dumbest thing I've read this year. And Lord knows we see plenty.
Yeah, there's a lot out there.
Corey, I mean, the whole thing's hard to keep a straight face with, but... maybe speak to the reaction of, like, you know, the Twitterati, you know, the lefty Twitterati, trying to defend it. Like,
I try
to be charitable with people's intentions, and even if people have bad ideas or stupid ideas, I try to take them at face value that they're sincerely held bad beliefs. But I have a hard time believing that most of them actually believe anything they're saying.
It's virtue signaling, and that's why they don't like it being mocked, because there's nothing to it. If they could point to demand and say, we've had a scourge of woman to men's trans people who found themselves on flight without feminine hygiene products and had to finish their flight with only one sock on, then they would be able to point out the need to provide these products. In these spots, but we don't have the demand sitting there.
Mark that one down for the starfish.
But either way, I mean, that's presumably what it's about. If it's a woman, but in that case, and I'm certain they're out there, they typically will pack the products so they don't have to suffer the indignity of having their gender transition exposed and dealing with that. But it's just not there. I mean, they're not going to be taken, except for maybe some guys are going to say, some freebies for the wife when I get home. Hey, you know, hey, honey, I finished my trip. I brought you some maxi pads. You're probably still better with perfume, but
just put them in the ladies' room.
Better than that.
We're not going to be married long. But
one of the defenses from the lefties here was that, what if men just take them and give them to women at the airport? Well, then just put them in the ladies' room. Like,
It's a matter of being, and that's part of the whole trans thing, though, is it always has to be in our face, always has to let us know that it's there and we're expected to embrace it, that we're expected to endorse it, and including in our men's rooms. I mean, I don't know a lot of trans people, but from the few I have encountered, they just typically want to live their life
as
trans people. They
don't
want to be in the face. In fact, they typically don't want to bring attention to it because they are of the gender they've transitioned to, and they just want to carry on from there.
They're trying to blend in and just be a normal person living the life as they see fit.
It's the activists who are making the racket. I don't think a trans man would be all that eager to walk into a crowded men's room and partake in grabbing one of those before going to a stall. They're trying to remain discreet. That's why they're using the men's room in the first place. But it's just, there's no end to it. There's no stop. It's a solution looking for a problem.
Are you going to let Michelle expense the dollar?
I think that's a fair expense.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if she actually bought one.
Salutations to Michelle Cundy for enterprising reporting. Anyway.
That was really good initiative. That's the kind of gumshoe reporters we've got here.
It's just, you need real demand. I remember Electric Avenue, you go to the men's room, they'd have $1 Dracar Noir and condoms available for guys who thought they might not smell good or have some optimistic hopes for the evening. But you know, they probably sold some of those things. Nobody's going to need these tampons.
And you paid a buck for them.
Yeah.
And the men's room, they're free. Ladies' room, the Calgary International Airport. But now we know that's actually kind of that's a weird transfer payment. That's an equalization payment we have from Alberta women to Ontario men. So, one of the other things the lefties are going on about was that it was like perverted to film yourself in a bathroom and the tampon machine. Just me and myself.
I saw some of that going on.
Yeah. And I'm like,
if you were holding your phone under the cubicles, I'd have some issue as well.
So me like taking a video of myself and a male tampon machine. That's gross. But a hairy guy going to take a leak in the ladies' room beside a six-year-old girl, nothing creepy about that.
No, that's fine.
Nothing creepy. That's odd. Nigel, do these people, do you think they actually believe what they're saying in this case? Because I think most of the time, lefties generally believe, and they're like, eat the rich, take their money. They mean it. They don't understand economics, but they mean it. Do you think they actually believe this stuff?
That is actually a very good question, and some, I'm sure, do, because there is a particular kind of asphyxiation of the mind that takes over, and you can talk yourself into anything. However, it's also a time-honored technique of activism to overstate your case and then kind of fall back to something that people can say, well, fine, all right. Go ahead. Yeah. So, your point about the hairy guy in the women's washroom, I actually don't think that's going to last.
No, and I think they're oversensitive about it right now, Corey, because they know it's going to end. The pendulum is swinging hard against them right now. Trudeau is going to very, very likely be out of power in a year and a half, and I could just imagine the press conference where they're like,
The trans fad has overplayed its hand, and we are seeing it. We're seeing it in the bastions of progressivism, Sweden, Norway, the UK. They're all backing off on all that, too. They've realized that pendulum's gone way too far. We're going to get back to some semblance of sanity here.
Acceptance, we're trailing, not insanity.
We're trailing because we have a virtue signaling dingbat of a prime minister, but he won't be there forever.
See, you're probably thinking of that poll that was done in the UK about 6 weeks ago, and it turned out that two-thirds of people actually aren't woke, don't like woke, reject woke. The one-third who like it are in government, and so they get to set the rules. But
they're overrepresented.
And I think that, nobody's done a survey here, but I suspect that it's around the same kind of reaction. In the end, common sense rules out. Look at some of the stupid things that have been done in different countries at different times. Eventually, everybody got over it. They went back to something that was a little bit more normal.
I think, Nico, let's put up a short little clip. Short enough that we don't get copyright trouble. Let's put up that short little clip from Monty Python and the Life of Brian, where they're discussing
the Colosseum.
Let's show that little clip.
I do feel, Reg, that any anti-imperialist group like ours must reflect such a divergence of interest within its power base.
Agreed, Francis. Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Reg, provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman.
To rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister. Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right.
Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
But Life of Brian is, I mean, amongst the more offensive things that's ever been put on television. But, you know, when they make a point, they hit it hard. Yeah. And, you know, they're dealing with it there, I think, in the 1980s or so.
And they weren't terribly insensitive about it either. No. I'll show Nigel and others who want to look it up. It's
those
funny,
guys were considered progressive, tolerant, liberal people who made Monty Python. Now they're considered, like, alt-right.
Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, I think a lot of the oversensitivity is that, it's so-called social progress. I hate the term because that implies there is a good end destination that is preordained. It's almost Whiggish in its predisposition. But generally when things go for so-called progress, they don't really fall back within the Western world. They go forward and they might slow down a bit, but they always keep on going. I think this is the first time they've so severely overplayed their hand that it's now going to swing back. And it's going to swing back hard to a place, I think, of tolerance, acceptance, and understanding, but not suspension of simple common sense, not believing what's in front of our own eyes, and not believing simple biology and fact that we've known since before we were cavemen.
I think the people, you're right, the people who actually bought into it and said, well, a man could be a woman, and a man can have a baby. I think of our prime minister, for example, who is quite committed to the point of view that a man is a woman if he says he's a woman. So people are going to regret they ever said those things. A few years yet, but it's coming.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move it along. I think yesterday or the day before, we had Trudeau's mega billion super free stuff budget. It is the biggest budget in Canadian history. Our debt load is now significantly more than it was even by the end of either World War. We have spent more money trying to keep Trudeau in office than we got spent getting Hitler out. New taxes. Sean Spear at the Hub had a good point. There was a kind of a theory developed in the 90s called Starve the Beast. It was a conservative economic political theory that if we cut taxes enough, there won't be enough revenue, and then we'll then have the political cover to be able to cut spending, cut the size of government itself. And he said this is the flip of that strategy called gorge the beast. Make the government so big, so massively bloated, that then now you've got the excuses to perpetually raise taxes. And so now we see capital gains significantly increased by about a third, massive increase in it. And a lot of people don't understand capital gains, and I'm not going to explain it here because it's terribly boring to explain. But it is possibly the most evil tax ever devised. And it is the most economically destructive tax ever devised. Canada's productivity is now below Italy. And I'm sorry to anyone of Italian descent watching, but it's always been my rule of thumb that if you're richer than Italy, you're a first world country. And if you're $1 poorer than Italy, you're a second world country. Italy was the cutoff. Italy is now richer than Canada. So by my own definition, Canada is now an upper tier second world country alongside Russia.
You have the colored money, we could be third world quite quickly.
Yeah.
That'll be as soon as Trudeau's picture's on it.
Corey, your thoughts on the budget?
It's a brute. One of the best analogies, you know, is the amount of interest payments. I mean, people don't think about that either. I mean, it's stuff that makes eyes glaze over. But servicing the debt is now going to cost more than we take in every year with the entire GST.
$51 billion.
Yeah, just
more than healthcare, more than the GST.
And that is money flushed. And that's one of the areas of the left of their idiocy and hypocrisy that gets to me. Oh, we hate big business. We can't stand corporations. We can't stand all those. Well, do you think it's the mom and pop store down the road that's financing, you know, 51? That's billions of dollars that could go to program spending, that could go to, you know, numerous things that would far more benefit to us as going to bonds, lending institutions, things such as that. It is brutal. It's a bad budget. It's attacking the economy, as you said, with the capital gains tax hikes. And also what gets me with it is it follows that pattern of they're always kicking the can down the road with long-term plans that never come to fruition. They budgeted a few years ago and said that the deficit was going to be down to $15 billion by now. People have already forgotten about that except for dorks like me, and now it's at $41 billion, and it'll probably be
more. Well, we were supposed to have a balanced budget from when Trudeau ran in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Little short-term deficit, just a little deficit.
And a lot of the items in this budget are all on long timelines. Oh, we're spending $8 billion on this over 6 years. We're spending $10 billion on that over 4 years. It's an ugly, misdirecting, bloated 400-page document of just, as has been said by some, David Dodge, the worst budget we've seen since 1982.
Well, you know, they're going out and planning to spend money at a time when they can't borrow it as cheaply as they could when they came to office.
Yeah, the interest rate's another.
And a lot of the bonds are maturing right now from earlier Trudeau debt and some of the later Harper debt. These bonds are maturing, and it's costing a lot more to refinance the debt. Nigel, it's pretty apparent to everyone. I think even liberals would sheepishly agree this is a panic budget. They're 20 points back in the polls right now. They're headed for a historic annihilation election here. They'll probably still be the second of the official opposition because the NDP hasn't picked up any votes. Poilievre has picked up all of the votes that have been shaken loose. But the Liberals are panicking to maybe even save the furniture at this point. Do you see anything in here? Like, raising taxes on people that are not yourselves is generally a politically popular thing to do. It might be economically illiterate and destructive to raise capital gains taxes, but most people at least aren't aware that they're paying most people are paying capital gains, you know, in your pension, your investment portfolio, etc. But most people don't know it. Do you think it's smart, maybe class warfare politics for the Liberals here to try and turn the ship around in terms of polling?
I don't know about class warfare exactly. What has happened is that because of liberal policies, we have inflation. Because we have inflation, we have higher home prices. Add in an increase in immigration, and you have got a situation where a whole generation that's now trying to enter the property market can't. They're living in their parents' basements. And so that generation has turned to the conservatives, and that is the basis of Pierre Poilievre's huge lead over the liberals. So this budget is an attempt to grab some money off the shelf, say they're going to fix the problem that they have caused, and then go and market themselves to the younger generation. It is, it's a racket. It's positively evil. If you're one of these people who worked hard all your life and hope to reap the rewards of it, or if you're a young person just starting out and you're trying to build the Canadian dream, and they've taken it away from you, and now they're going to load you up with debt as you go from your 20s to your 30s to your 40s, ask you to pay the interest that on the loans that they've taken out, to say that they will solve the problem that they've created for you.
But politically, do you think this might succeed at all?
No.
I do think at this point people have tuned Trudeau out. I think the bottom has fallen out. I think generally tax other people to give you free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty tried and true popular political move.
Politics of envy. But there's got to be a degree of trust and faith that is going to achieve something. And this is a tired out old government. I mean, Trudeau is the same age as me. He's aged better. I'll give him that credit. But
nobody ever said you had nice hair.
No, I don't have to worry about those compliments.
Corey for prime minister.
Yeah. But I mean, he's not the fresh young face to the youth anymore either. He's lost that youth vote. I mean, he's a middle-aged man now and a tired one. I mean, he won that youth vote based on some spark and vigor and showmanship. He doesn't have that anymore, and he can't win them on policy. So sometimes it could be smart policy, certainly playing that politics of envy, tax the rich, that sort of thing. But from a government where people have just lost faith in everything they do, it's just not going to turn that boat around.
Yeah, because you think back to his big promises in 2015. He was going to stop global warming. He didn't. He didn't stop global warming by making – I paid my carbon tax. Global warming is still happening.
Wow, it was pretty cold yesterday.
Yeah. Ending first past the post voting. Well, he made that promise when he was third party. Once he won a majority by himself with first past the post, he came to the conclusion, oh, first past the post must be pretty good. It elected me after all. And actually keeps him in power despite losing the popular vote consistently now. But, you know, to your point, Nigel, about, you know, young people unable to afford a place, he did have one measure there. He can't help you buy your own house, but the government is going to give you a low interest loan so that your in-laws can move in with you. they're going to give low interest loans so that you can renovate your place and put an ensuite for your parents or your in-laws. Now, I mean, do whatever you want. But, I mean, it's just these little micro policies.
It's not exactly a solution, is it?
I would rather have my own place and have my parents move back in with me.
They won't address the real problem, which is a lack of supply and an excess of demand. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And they keep throwing money at it, which only increases the prices of things. I mean, some of their solutions, like saying, oh, we're going to extend the terms for mortgages, or we're going to give more ways for people to increase their credit rating. Look, if you're making $70,000 a year and the houses in your neighborhood are $1.1 million, it doesn't matter how good your credit is, you're not buying one. He finally at least acknowledged that they're bringing too many bloody people into the country right now. He didn't say he's going to do anything about it. I mean, so baby steps here. But until he reduces that demand somehow, we're hooked. And they can claim they're going to increase supply, but they can't do that.
The idea of putting more money in suggests that perhaps there are a lot of people who would be building houses if there was only money.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. No. Anybody who knows how to do this is already doing it and making a fortune.
And they'll charge even more now that money's being pumped into a cramped market.
That's another inflationary action right there. This is the underlying problem with the Liberals since day one, is that they do not understand basic economics, and they don't listen to people who do.
Well, perhaps there'd be more, more money to go around for some of these projects if we didn't spend a few million a year on tampons for men. It's incredible. And just coming back to the incredible borrowing, there is not even a I remember when I was a finance critic for the Wild Rose in the Alberta legislature, the NDP would table a budget every year, the way Alison Redford and Stelmach did before then, predicting in year three or five a balanced budget. They never got there. They always just, something happened this year that we could have never foreseen, but we're going to do it one year again. So it was always in year five. And they had a theoretical balanced budget, just at least paying lip service to it. The Liberals don't even have a theoretical best case scenario. If all the planets line up, everything goes our way, and we become the richest country in the world overnight, we'll balance the budget theoretically in 5 or 7 years. They don't even have that. We'll start with you, Nigel. How difficult, is Polyev going to be able to survive 4 years with the cuts that are going to be required to get the budget under control? I mean, balancing it. I mean, if you put a maniac like me in charge, I could balance it. But it's going to, the federal government would be left a heap of rubble, which I think would be a good thing. But is Polyev going to be able to survive 4 years with the huge cuts that are going to be required to get the budget under control when we're spending, I think, $54 billion a year on interest, which is the entire GST or the entire health budget?
Any government has got three options. You either cut expenditures or you raise taxes. And then the third option is you allow inflation. to take place.
Or deficit.
We're already seeing. Yeah. Well, that's the bar. That's the so there. We're already seeing the inflation. Your question about will Poilievre be able to do that and get elected 4 years later? I actually think that this is part of what the Liberals are doing now is a scorched earth policy, making it virtually impossible for anybody to do anything. So they'll just be filthy unpopular in 2029 and back come the Liberals who will promise all things to all men. Bitterly cynical stuff, but that's the game that's being played. What would Poilievre do? Well, I think he certainly would cut. That's the accusation that Mr. Singh makes against him, that he's going to scrap a bunch of programs. Well, I hope he scraps them all and more yet. I mean, there are some things you just can't afford. And then as for taxes, my expectation, my hope, that is as a principled conservative, Mr. Poilievre would take the view that you generate activity by lightening tax loads. And it could be a bit of a squeeze at first, but if you actually get this country working, like our real GDP has been below, it's a minus number.
Well, our GDP per capita has now been going down for well over a year.
Yeah, six quarters now.
Only thing that has made our GDP look positive is escalating house prices, which is one of the reasons why I think the Liberals have allowed it to happen. Mm-hmm. But if you take care of the essentials, I think it is possible to hold this thing back from the brink. That is what Poilievre is likely to try to do. You can't, but he will certainly cut. And I don't know whether it'll be up to him whether there's inflation or not. It happens. It's rolling.
Corey, Poilievre is not, a mealy-mouthed, wishy-washy Tory the way Aaron O'Toole was. Poilievre is a real deal. Mm-hmm. We know this guy. He means what he says what he means. He is a rock rib conservative and understands the fiscal files extremely well. He was their finance critic for a long time. He gets this stuff. I think he knows what he needs to do with the budget once he likely comes to power. But it's going to, the lefties, the unions are going to be screaming bloody murder in the streets for the kind of spending reductions that are going to be absolutely necessary to avoid a Greek-style fiscal collapse in this country. I have a lot of confidence he knows what he needs to do, but the politics is going to be so brutal around it. Do you think he's going to do it?
I think he can do it. He can pull it off. You don't want to underestimate, actually, Canadians' ability to understand just how bad it is once it gets bad enough. You're young enough, it wasn't such an issue, but living through the 90s.
The early 90s.
And the wall was hit, and Canadians realized it. So even though the unions, the pundits, the same old ones were saying, we can't cut, you can't afford it, we're going to scream. And in Alberta, they were literally kicking the doors of the legislature while Klein was doing his cuts. And what happened? Klein got a bigger majority. And he cut some more, and he got a bigger majority. Mike Harris got a majority. Roy Romano got a majority NDP by cutting. Chrétien got a majority by cutting. So Canadians will accept cuts when they know it has to happen. They might not like them, but they will accept them, and they will reward a strong politician for doing it. But you've got to be the right politician to do it. Poilievre certainly doesn't pull any punches, but he also can grate on a lot of people. Unfortunately, personality is part of the whole deal. People loved Ralph. He could get away with darn near anything. I don't know if Mr. Poilievre pulls that kind of weight, but I think he can. He can.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
All right, we're going to bring it back closer to home here. The Coots 3. I know one of them, Marco van Hugenbos. I don't know if you have the Hugenbos. I'm not sure if you've got the names of. Here's the others. We've got Alex van Herk and Gerhard Jansen. Lots of Dutch in there. It's southern around there. Everyone's Dutch or German, southern Alberta. We remember the episode at Coots. It was kind of a protest blockade of the border against mandates and lockdowns. A lot of these guys were truckers who Trudeau essentially had their jobs outlawed for crossing the border. They couldn't cross the border because of laws Trudeau passed. So I think I generally am not favorable to blocking the border, but when your own government says you can't cross your border, you've now got some reasonable grounds to block said border that your own government says you can't cross. you know, it was kind of a light Berlin Wall kind of thing Trudeau had built here. They've after a fairly long drawn out process, last night the three were found guilty of mischief above $5,000. It's odd. We have rapists who get released even after being convicted, but you know, the process gets drawn out too long, and a rapist that gets let out. Guy who vandalized my motorcycle, and as a result, I almost got killed in an accident. Charged, didn't show up for court. Police did absolutely nothing. These three guys are in the protest, but they're now, I'm not sure, they haven't been sentenced yet, so I'm not sure what's going to happen. But I have a feeling that the state is going to give them the book. They're going to give them the heaviest time possible, is my guess. I could be wrong. But there is certainly the heavy hand of justice here, but so light on anything else. I'm not aware of anyone. Just yesterday, there was a bunch of Hamas supporters blocking a rail terminal in Ontario. I'm not aware of a single charge there as actual terrorism supporters block critical infrastructure. We'll start with you, Corey. Do you think the law is being applied equally here to how it is with other groups that and courts are finding maybe more sympathetic?
Definitely isn't. I mean, Idle No More, same thing. They were blocking railroad tracks. Nobody would get charged. The pipeline and construction in BC, when they were blockading that and violently being removed, they'd always get the charges dropped. These guys, they followed through all the way to the very end to make sure they pin and convict a charge upon them. I'm not arguing whether or not maybe that's, you know, those charges should be applied to all, or they shouldn't have been applied to any. But right now, there's definitely a double standard going on.
You got to go one way or the other. Yeah. You applied to everyone, you applied to no one.
They're definitely giving everything they can. This is like the Alberta version of Tamara Leach. As Nigel and I were talking a bit earlier, it's easy to confuse this with the Coutts 4, which was a separate set of charges and a whole different ball of wax there. These were guys who were just organizers of the protest, though it blocked infrastructure that had to be, you know, removed and broken down eventually, but it wasn't a violent action or anything like that with these guys. They do want to make sure, though, that at least when it comes to this end of the spectrum, if you're going to protest, they want everybody to know you're going to pay a price for it. We're going to go after you. We're going to convict you, and you're going to be left with a record and possibly some jail time. Which, hey, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm liberty-minded, but I also believe in a degree of control. But if you're going to...
But you generally shouldn't block borders as a general rule.
Same sort of thing when you get the same person who blocks a pipeline five times in a row and you got to keep arresting him. Maybe it's time to lay some charges. But you got to get an equal application of this law, and they're not doing it.
Nigel, the defense's main defense was that there was no clear leadership. These guys were... They went after these guys rather than everyone because they were the leaders. I think, I don't know all of them, but I know at least one was prominent among them. But, you know, we had a reporter embedded in the room as these guys made decisions. We had unprecedented access during the Coutts blockade. And it was amply evident that there was no clear leadership and hierarchy of this. It was a couple of guys sitting around the Alamo. Like, you know, they certainly, there's going to be some stronger personalities that stand out here, but I mean, anybody who understood it knew that, you know, there was no like union boss who showed up and led the protest here. It was a very decentralized, pretty egalitarian thing here. Any idea on why their defense that they were not really leaders because it was just kind of a group effort didn't stand up?
Obviously, the jury. Couldn't think of a reason why they should get off. I have to sort of look at it from that point of view. You know, you can either have good decision-making or bad decision-making, but somehow or other there was decision-making and the juries decided they needed to answer for it. But I have a lot of respect for these people. Sure, if I'd been trying to get across the border that day, I'd have probably been fed up because my own plans were being interrupted. But, you know, progress depends on the unreasonable person. And if you look just in the history of the last 150 years, at the number of people who have defied a legitimate law because they thought it was wrong, who are now on postage stamps, mm-hmm. you have to accept that these guys stood up for what they believed in, and they are to be admired for that because they were prepared to take the consequences. They didn't stand up and run away. They said, all right, we will take our stand, we'll see it through, and if the law goes against us, well, what happens, happens. Well, it's about to happen. We'll find out what the penalties will be. But I mean, I'm going to butcher the Dutch here, but Van Hugenbos, honestly, he said, there's no surprise here for me. Based on the charge, based on the interpretation of the law, we're guilty. All right, fair enough. He said it. And now I go back to thinking about people like Nelson Mandela or Lech Walesa, or Rosa Parks, you know. These are people who did what they did.
They broke the law.
They broke the law. They did. They knew bad things could happen. Ultimately, they came out on the right side. Now they are celebrated. This may not be the year that these three gentlemen get celebrated, but give them credit.
I'd say a good half of Alberta is still cheering them on right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rick Strankman built a political career on defying the grain exchange law.
Yeah, I had lunch with Rick Strankman just yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that is a great example, and it involves the border. Yeah. So just a little bit of history for the, you know, younger folks. I wasn't paying too much attention to the wheat board at this time, too. I think it was a teenager. But, you know, it used to be illegal for Western, not Eastern, but Western farmers to sell their grain, their barley, etc., to anyone except for the federal government. It was I think it was a World War One measure.
Maybe two. It was like the supply management policy.
World War One. Yeah. It was brought in, I guess, as a wartime measure. Maybe it was defensible at the time, although not if it only applied to the West. But so the federal government would have control of this stuff, and they never let it go. And these guys wanted the right, like people in almost any other industry other than dairy, to be able to sell their products to who they wanted. And it was illegal. And to challenge the law, Rick Strankman and his boys drive down to the border, and Rick got on the phone. He says, hey, just so you know, I'm about to cross the border with some grain. You better come and stop me. And then the next phone call was CTV, Globe and Mail, Calgary Herald, Calgary Sun, come on down. And these guys got arrested, and they went to jail for selling grain. And that exposed to Canada how ridiculous the system was. People out east didn't even know about it because their farmers weren't subject to this. And, you know, so that's, I know this is a bit of a tangent here, but it was.
Well, really, it's the same principle.
And it was at a southern Alberta border crossing. I don't
the
think
same
it was.
One? No, I think was it was Coutts, because that's the main commercial one down south.
It could have been Coutts.
Yeah,
it could have been Coutts. Probably was. So it's pretty relevant. And in this case, like, I am generally not down. And we have to try and separate when we like a cause and when we don't. But in general, no, you don't block rail crossings. You don't block roads. You don't block border crossings. But in this case, the federal government banned Canadians from crossing their own border to do their job. They essentially built an invisible Berlin Wall for Canadians. And in that case, when the government takes away your right to do something, you have a right to take away the government's right to do that same thing. So, you know, I think they were justified in this case.
Mm-hmm. Hey, part of their problem, we saw that as we watched, and poor James interminably stuck down there in the cold weather and around it. Oh, he did a great job. But they're not good at coming up with an exit strategy. Rick knew what he was doing. He went down. We're going to get busted. We're going to move along. We're moving the process. Yeah. These guys, after day six, you're kind of, now you're twiddling your thumbs, but you don't want to give up.
Like, they had an exit strategy that was good. And then one maniac walked in, convinced them to do a bad.
We don't want to go down that rabbit
hole. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
But they have a problem sometimes making their point and moving on. And that's when you start to get into trouble, too.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up there. I think we had a great conversation today. Certainly, you know, everything from the budget to tampons for men to civil disobedience and rehashing COVID a little bit here. So quite the round robin we did. Well, Corey, Nigel, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having us.
I thank all of you for joining us. The Western Standard is one of the extremely few media left in all of Canada that refuses to take the federal government's media bailout subsidy. If you're watching right now, it's because some people are supporting us by becoming members. It's $10 a month or $100 a year. If you're not a member of the Western Standard, but you enjoy what we're doing, you need to support us like those who are right now are already doing. Because if you don't, We're just going to end up like the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, the National Post, the Calgary Herald, the Calgary Sun, and end up taking government money. So if you want to support our work, go to westernstandard.news, become a member. It's easy, and you'll be doing God's work. Thank you very much for joining us today. God bless. You can become a Western Standard member for just $10 a month or $99 a year for unlimited access.